Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
This is my fourth part of the interview with Rick Jackson, the retired LAPD detective who now works for cold cases for the San Mateo County Sheriff's Office. He was a major inspiration and for the fictional character Harry Bosch, that great Michael Conley character he's developed in his novels. And today we're going to talk about Rick's work investigating cold cases. Rick, it seems like, and I know this just from reading and in my own practice, we hear a lot about wrongful convictions, or at least more than we should. I've never heard of a wrongful conviction resulting from a solved cold case. Why do you think that is?
So many of the cold cases are now directly related to DNA results that come back. And DNA by itself isn't the cure-all. You know, if you, let's say, for instance, you have a prostitute and you get DNA from the sexual assault kits, does that mean that the last person that had sexual relations with that woman was the killer? Maybe, likely maybe, but since there were multiple contacts sometimes within a day, it doesn't necessarily hold true. So, but by and large, they're DNA related, and most of the wrongful convictions seem to now be as a result of DNA results that were unavailable back when an original conviction occurred, maybe back in the 60s or 70s, 80s or whatever, before the DNA became, you know, one of the things that was a go-to thing to do in certain types of homicide cases.
Is there a particular cookie cutter format that you use when you begin investigating a cold case, when it lands on your desk?
A lot of the cases that we select, both when I was with the LAPD cold case unit from its onset and to where I am now, which was offered to me just a couple of years ago, just on a part-time basis, just to kind of, I kind of missed the case part of it, and so I went back. A lot of those are self-initiated. We look through cases that are the most probative for success. I mean, we could spin our wheels on a lot of cases that don't have really avenues to reinvestigate that might eventually, you know, give us a suspect and give us a solve. So we look at the ones that are the most likely to do so. And those are cases where there is potential DNA, or there's fingerprints that were left that are in specific locations or are in blood that were not left by the victim. And now in the fingerprint situation, and it's not as sexy as DNA, but it's a great tool, is we have the fingerprint computers, which started in the mid-80s, but now they're all connected state to state in the FBI system. And so it'll go through millions of fingerprints to make a determination on was that print left by person A, person B, or whoever. In the old days, you know, we had to say if John Smith's, you wanted to run John Smith's prints, you had to have John Smith's prints and compare them one-on-one to make a determination if it was John Smith's prints. Now they can be run through the system and millions of prints can be gone through in a short period of time, and it pops out people that, you know, where there's a match or a likely match that has been verified by an in-person fingerprint examiner. But you look at the ones like, let's say, a burglary, where you know the person's inside and moving around and touching things. So that's a higher likelihood of good fingerprints. You look at cases where there's physical contact, whether it's a sexual in nature or whether it's like a struggle, and you look at those because you know that there's hand-to-hand and evidence left at the scene that could result in DNA identification. You know, is there a foreign blood? Does the victim have scrapings under their nails where they were fighting and scratching and struggling with the suspect that was killing them? And believe it or not, it seems like we were getting tons of results from 1970s cases. So it's stuff that lasts for a long time. Matter of fact, we just solved a case from 1974 in San Mateo from this man just ripping at her Levi corduroy jeans. The DNA had been left just from him grabbing onto the crotch of her jeans and tearing. There was no sexual assault involved. It was, you know, a sexually motivated case, but the sexual assault was never carried out because she struggled. But we were able to connect him based on him grabbing the crotch of her pants and tearing. And it's been sitting on a shelf for 45 years, and it still had the DNA of the suspect on it, which is amazing. It still boggles my mind that we have gotten this far, and they're getting more and more sensitive all the time.
Well, and I guess that also brings up, I used to watch this CBS show Cold Case back in the early aughts, and I used to think to myself as that show was going on, if all these witnesses from the frat party from 30 years ago would just keep their mouths shut, they'd never solve any of these cases. But the whole idea that those cases are solved just by people talking, there's usually some science aspect to all these solved cold cases, right?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, there have been cases that Tim and I worked in the early days of the cold case unit. While we were waiting for the laboratory to catch up, they only had four DNA analysts for the whole city of Los Angeles because it was new. So we had to go out and look other ways to solve cases. And what there are things that can hurt you from a case from 30 or 40 years before. Witnesses, memories fade, witnesses die, things like that. Evidence sometimes get inadvertently destroyed. But there are also positives. You go and talk to somebody that maybe protected somebody back when they were 20 years old. You know, the two friends running together and your friendship meant everything. It didn't matter if the person maybe killed somebody. But you go back to them 40 years later when they're a 60-year-old adult and allegiances have changed. They're no longer friends with that person. They've gone different ways. You start to have a conscience about things that maybe you didn't have a conscience about when you were 20 years old and running with the person that did a murder. There are things that can be beneficial to you by a long wait. So it can go both ways.
I'm sure you had to go through various trainings over the years for interrogation. Is interrogation different on a cold case than it would be on a hot one?
It can be. It can be. One thing, I've always felt fairly comfortable in talking to people from all kinds of layers of society. But it depends on how you approach people. My feeling, I've always just said, hey, your name's come up in a case. We want to sit down and talk to you about it and, see what you remember. I want to show you some photographs from back then. Well, a lot of times a suspect will want to see photographs. We did that recently on that 74 case, and the guy waived his rights and talked to us, and he didn't admit the murder, but he said some things that aren't going to be helpful to him that could be used against him. And it's all legal, and, it's recorded, and, it is what it is. But and a lot of people that will talk about something from years ago, they're going to say, my memory's bad back then. My memory's bad. It's a long time ago. I'm not going to remember it. Well, you remember killing somebody. there's no doubt about that. If you strangle someone to death that's fighting with you, you're going to remember that. Unless you totally, have Alzheimer's or total dementia, you're going to remember things like that. You might not give the specifics of what the person was wearing at the time, things like that, but you're going to remember the overall incident, and that's what you rely on.
We just had a cold case solved in Iowa, or potentially solved. I guess the trial hasn't happened yet, using one of these Ancestry DNA database. Right. That's happened. I think the Golden State Killer was another one that came up like that. But
yeah, that's one of the first ones, if not the first one, where they did use the private databases.
Yeah, with the way these databases are working now, these ideas, is this just something a detective getting a great idea? You know what? Let's try this and see if it works, kind of like how all good police work works.
Right. It's a combination of the detectives coming up with these ideas along with the crime lab people who are into the genetics and the forensics, and also some of the people that are, you know, involved in the genealogy databases having these ideas too. It's a combination. It's not just always coming from the detective themselves. It's stuff that detectives get ideas from talking to people. And new ideas are coming up all the time. Matter of fact, we just were trying to set up an interview recently with a professor over at University of California, Santa Cruz, who has developed a technique for getting DNA from a hair. This is nuclear DNA, like the typical DNA we use from the cell. But it used to be you had to use, the hair had to have a cell, like a root, to test it for nuclear DNA. And otherwise, you can only get mitochondrial, which only comes from your mother, and there's no databases involved in mitochondrial. But now they've developed a system for, or a technique for getting nuclear DNA that could go into the databases that we have on known criminals from a hair without a root. In other words, maybe a broken hair or a hair that was pulled that for some reason broke off with that and did not include the root of the hair. So this stuff's coming up all the time. And the perfect example is when I first started looking at DNA stuff back in the early 90s when it was just starting to develop in the U.S., you needed a blood drop like the size of a quarter, which is a pretty sizable blood drop, to get a DNA profile. And now you can get it from touch DNA. It's invisible. You swab it and you have DNA there. The sensitivity of these new tests and what they can do with them, it's amazing.
As you solve a cold case homicide, are you sometimes surprised at how close the original detectives were, but for a few things that you discovered?
So many of them are, the ones we solve are the completely stranger cases, where someone is killed by somebody that picks them up as a hitchhiker, or somebody hitchhikes and gets picked up and kills the driver, or somebody, total strangers, where there was no really look into a likelihood of developing a suspect. They were looking at other serial killers or other predatory-type killers and wondering if they might have been the same person. Now, on the one case I just said, the 1974 case, we always felt, from the time we first looked at it, as did the detectives back in the 70s, from looking at their investigations, they always felt a 1973 case, a 1974 case, one in Santa Clara County and one in neighboring San Mateo County, were connected. Both were young women, 21 years old, last seen at Stanford University leaving, one in a car, one hitchhiking. And those were confirmed to have been done by the same person. Santa Clara got their case. They got DNA under the fingernails, which matched the DNA that we got off the crotch of the woman's pants from him trying to rip the cords. So that was right on. They had that. They just didn't know who the suspect was. But so many of them are just complete strangers, where there was no really suspect developed back in the original investigation.
All right, it's always fascinating to chat with you. It's Rick Jackson, retired LAPD detective, now working cold cases with San Mateo County Sheriff's Office in California. He also works with Michael Conley in providing insight to his book, specifically the Harry Bosch character. Rick, it's been a pleasure talking to you these last few weeks. Thanks so much for joining us on here.
All right, Brian, one of these days I'll see you in Iowa and we will golf.
All right, I'm going to hold you to that.
All right, you take care.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Say goodbye to Hollywood.